Kenneth Lesser, your host for another hour of Advanced Living Radio. And am I excited today? You bet. I've gone to the website, advancedliving.com, and I wanted to put forward, there's so much about healing, and we have a wonderful guest today that's going to share with us some amazing information. And today I was inspired to put a theme on the website. When you go to advancedliving.com, the very first thing you see is a statement that I created that just is the whole center of the work we're doing, and I know our guests today can relate to this. It's a statement that says, there is nothing that can't be cured by love. And today, we're going to have a whole bunch of love coming from Sarah Maria Dreisbach, and she is a wonderful individual who, like many of us, picked a life path that had some huge challenges in it. And she's here to help us to make some breakthroughs. As we know, there's a song, Let There Be Peace on Earth, and let it begin with who? You, my cousin, my uncle, parents, siblings? No, let it begin with me. Okay, well, one of Sarah's specialties, of course, is dealing with our body. So she's here to help us. We talk about ending the war in this place and that place. Well, she wants us to help do ending the war with our bodies so you can be free to free that true beauty within you now. And Sarah says, I can guarantee you one thing. If you are having a war with your body, you'll lose. And you will lose and your body will lose. That the only possibility for attaining a healthy body, a healthy soul, and a healthy mind is collaboration between all aspects of ourselves. And she reminds us that many of us are fighting the war against our bodies. We're not thin enough, so we starve ourselves. We're not toned enough, so we exercise to exhaustion. We're not healthy enough, so we dine on wheatgrass and alfalfa sprouts. And yet we're not beautiful enough, so we keep ourselves apart from others and the love that they might offer. I don't know if any of you can relate to any of that. There's so much going on about bodies. And Sarah Marie, she has firsthand experience with body hatred and eating disorders and just body image distortion and obsession. So she struggled incessantly with her relationship with her body and food. And after years of searching, she was able to create a loving, healthy, and compassionate relationship with her body, heart, mind, and soul. Yes. Oh, not many of us have reached that, and we're blessed today to have Sarah here talking to us and helping to explain. And she's been through a lot. She got a law degree. She's done learned and studied a diploma in Ayurvedic Lifestyle Counseling and has got a certification from the Deepak Chopra Center as a meditation instructor, and she's done wonderful, wonderful work, Ananda Healing Arts, yoga instruction, massage therapy. My goodness, we are just in for a treat, ladies and gentlemen. So welcome, welcome, please. Sarah, come on in and let's have some fun.
Wonderful. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Now, I was interested because you're a young woman and you've been through some pretty tough stuff. And it seems like this, what they call body loathing, seems to be kind of rampant, especially in young girls and women. Why is that happening?
You know, it is. It's the statistics show that 80 to 90% of women don't like their bodies.
Wow.
Yeah, 80 to 90%.
It's
astounding.
Yeah.
And of course, among, you know, young women, it's a huge issue. There's also a lot of data coming out that says it's, you know, older women are really struggling with it. And a lot of, you know, women who struggled as adolescents, you know, and in their early 20s are then it's re-emerging in their 40s and their 50s.
Mm.
And it's, yeah, the numbers are really astronomical. Why it's happening, I think a lot of it, you know, is the influence of culture, and that our culture has defined beauty very narrowly. You know, that beauty is young, beauty is thin, beauty has no, you know, cellulite, no wrinkles, no, you know, so-called blemishes. There was a study.
Oh, it sounds like a trip to the wax museum there.
That's exactly right. It's exactly right. You know,
you're talking about a study.
There was a study done by Harvard University in Fiji, of all places. They they found out after TV, after television and advertising was introduced into Fiji, the incidence of anorexia and bulimia and other eating disorders shot way up. So there does, you know, definitely seem to be a correlation between, you know, the advertising, what the media is showing us, and how people think they should look.
Ooh, ouch. Huh. So you've, I guess, fell into this trap yourself, from what I understand. I don't know if it was media exposure or how you got there, but you have some years of dealing with that, right?
That's exactly right. And in my case, it's interesting because I never had television growing up, and I wasn't exposed, you know, particularly to the media. But I was very much a perfectionist, very driven, and a book just came out called Perfect Daughters, Starving Girls, or Starving Girls, Perfect Daughters. And what she's saying is that, you know, so many young women grow up trying to be perfect, and they, you know, that is in every area of their life, but it also shows up in their relationship to their body. So they get this idea, you know, and where the perfect body is thin and tone and fit, you know, everything that our culture says is beautiful.
Right.
And really, their self-worth, and what happened for me was my self-worth became defined by how small my clothing size was and how often I exercised and how little I ate. That I really, in order to feel good about myself, I had to, you know, be a certain size. I had to, you know, do a certain amount of physical activity, which was excessive. I had to do, you know, eat very, very limited foods. And all that energy trying to be quote unquote perfect, one, it was very detrimental for my long-term health, and two, it really cut me off from relationships. And I love your quote at the beginning that, you know, love is that force that heals everything. And, you know, I think so many times, and what happened for me was I was chasing this illusion of, you know, oh, I just need to be this clothing size, or I just need to look this way. And in doing that, I missed, you know, the love and the abundance that was right in front of me.
Mm, okay. And that's one of the reasons, I guess, in your program, you put an emphasis on inner work and on a spiritual connection.
That's exactly right. And I take people through a five-step process in, you know, dealing with, I mean, it struggles with their body, but it can be applied to, you know, any struggle of this nature. And the first thing is be willing to change. You know, you really have to be fed up with, you know, the dieting and the kind of self-abuse that so many people experience. And then two, you need to learn to identify the voices that are telling you what you should do and how you should do it. You know,
Does that mean you should, like, give them names to the different voices, or?
No, it's that, you know, I think in this culture there still tends to be a strong emphasis on, you know, I think, therefore I am.
Ah.
And we, you know, many people, many of the clients I work with aren't able to differentiate who they are versus the thoughts that they're having.
Oh.
You know? They think, they respond automatically to the thoughts. And so what I help people to do is say, okay, you know what, identify that as a thought and then realize you can make a different choice.
Oh, wow. So do you have a particular technique? Because one of the terms from my NLP background would be like some inner dialogue.
Yes, exactly. I do a lot of dialogue work, both in understanding, okay, where do these voices come from? Because they might come from parents. In my case, I was heavily influenced by a father who had his own struggles with weight and food. And, you know, growing up, I internalized a lot of that. I work with athletes that get a lot of pressure from coaches growing up, that they have to be a certain weight. So I go through a process of helping people dialogue, okay, where is this voice coming from? How did I learn it? You know, did it come from the TV? Did it come from a parent? Did it come from a teacher? Did it come from a coach? Maybe all of the above.
Yeah.
You know? And then deciding, okay, I can make a choice to listen to this voice, or I can, you know, I can let go of it, say, okay, this is a voice, I don't need to listen to it.
Yeah, maybe that'd be a better voice to listen to.
Exactly, exactly. And that's where I help people, you know, connect through meditation, through visualization, to their spiritual essence, if you will. You know, who they really are, and what's the voice that they want to be telling themselves, and that they want to be listening to. And it really is, you know, I believe it needs to be a voice of love, you know, that even if people, you know, so maybe they need to make healthier lifestyle choices or, you know, that's fine, but it, you know, it needs to come from that place of love and that place of nurturing the body, mind, and spirit.
Sure. Well, I'm curious, Sarah, would you share, for instance, for myself and our listeners today, if we were sitting in one of your sessions and we wanted to improve the way that we talk to ourselves or voices of influence that we had going on within us, would you share a few things that we'd want to be saying to ourselves or hearing to make us move along on that path of love?
Sure. You know, the first thing what I tell, you know, get a notepad, you know, get a small pad of paper.
Yes.
And write down throughout the day, and it might be a kind of, for me, it was an astonishing experience to actually write down all the negative thoughts you're having.
Oh.
You know, throughout the day. Wait, okay.
Yeah.
Negative thought, write it down. Get it on paper, and then see, you know, how are you really talking to yourself? I heard a great quote from Marianne Williamson that said, if we talk to our friends the way we talk to ourselves, we would have no friends. You know? And I thought, how true is that? And most of the time we don't even realize we're doing it. You know?
So it becomes so ingrained.
Exactly.
Self-criticism, a critical environment, a society dominated by drama.
Yes.
And you can't have drama if people are saying kind things to each other, can you?
Exactly. It's exactly right. And so what I tell people is get the little, you know, the little notebook that you can stick in your pocket.
Yeah.
You know, and throughout the day, write down every negative thought.
Oh, okay.
And then, so that's the first thing. And then,
and then you immediately tell them to someone else so you don't keep them inside yourself?
I have people write it down. If they have someone that they are close with, you know, that they can share it with, that's great. And in a lot of the work I do with couples, you know, I have them work, you know, together on this. But for people that, you know, are alone, that maybe don't have someone that they could share with, I have them start by writing it down. And then the second, you know, kind of step I take them through is find out what is the, where is the care, where is the concern in those voices. Most of the time when we beat ourselves up, there is, it's often, you know, a parental voice or a coach or, you know, some authority position that is trying to look out for our best interest, maybe in not the best way.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, let's say I have the negative thought of, you know, I'm a fat slob and, you know, I need to exercise more. And so
well,
I write,
okay.
You know, so I write that down and I say, okay, that's not very nice, but what am I trying to learn here? And, you know, it might be, okay, what the voice is trying to say is I want you to take good care of yourself so that you're around for a long time. That's a very different statement. You know?
Oh.
Does that make sense? Does it make sense?
Wow. Wow. So when we talk about that art of reading between the lines.
Yeah. You know, you want to find out, okay, what are the critical voices? What's my best interest that they have? You know? And then you can begin to take these critical voices and dialogue with them in a sense. So instead of, you know, you fat slob, you know, didn't work out today. You can say, okay, I hear that, you know, what you're trying to say is I have, you know, I should be physically active because you care about me. You want me to be around for a long time.
Yeah.
And then depending on, let's say you're a compulsive exerciser and you had just worked out 4 days that week and you get this negative voice on the fifth day. So the other part of you can say, you know what? I actually already worked out 4 days this week and I really know to take care of myself. I needed to take a day off. Okay, great. So you heard the voice, you acknowledged it, you dialogued with it, and you created an understanding. You know, and, you know, for somebody else, maybe it's, oh, you know what, I hear you saying this. I haven't worked out for 2 weeks. Thank you for that information. I'm going to go exercise tomorrow, you know, but I would appreciate if you talk to me in a kinder and gentler way next time.
Mm. Okay, so there's a bit of that assertiveness in there to stand up for oneself.
Exactly, because we, you know, and what I teach in my work is we want to be in control of our thoughts, not have our thoughts controlling our life, you know?
Yeah.
And the way we do that is through, first of all, being aware of the thoughts and then transforming them, working with them to produce the desired outcome we want to see.
Mm. Ooh, that's great. That's great. That's so much that we hear as a man thinketh in his heart, so he is.
Yes.
But different statements from different writers that remind us that the quality of our thoughts is directly related to the quality of our lives.
Right.
Oh, so you're really focusing on that quite a bit.
Yeah, exactly. And so I take people through, you know, identifying these voices and then learning to dialogue with the voices. All is part of what, you know, what I call identifying and detaching from the voices. So it's identifying and then learning to detach from them.
Oh.
So that they aren't, they're not controlling our life and our sense of self-worth.
Well, that's important. Now, the website that has a lot of information about you, is that the breakfreebeauty.com?
That's exactly right.
Okay, breakfreebeauty.com, where you can learn more about Sarah Marie's programs here. Oh, this is exciting. Now I'm curious too, there's some things that you can advise for parents with daughters about how to help them to avoid some of these problems, because the youth, like you say, is really high at risk.
Yes, yes. And there's a lot that parents can do. You know, one thing, you know, that is perhaps the biggest influence is for parents to make sure that they have a positive relationship with their bodies and with food you know, in that they have a positive self-image. Because what happens, and, you know, I've talked to so many women and even men that struggle with their eating, and it originated with their parents. So maybe their mother or father was a closet eater. And then all of a sudden they grow up and they find themselves sneaking food. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, their mother or father was a compulsive exerciser. You know, as children growing up, we model our parents' behavior. And so the first thing I tell parents is, you know, make sure you've done your work and that you really have a peaceful relationship with your own body and your relationship with food, so that without even saying a word, you're going to transmit that healthy relationship to your child.
Oh, you know? Because we learn by role modeling.
Exactly, exactly. Oh. You know, and then there's, you know, obviously, you know, encouraging healthy eating habits in children, but really not especially with, you know, with daughters. I advise parents to be very sensitive about what they're saying. People often comment unconsciously if they see someone on TV and they say, oh, doesn't that person look great? And their daughter hears that and all of a sudden they think, oh, wow, I want to look like that. And that person's really thin, so I need to go on a diet.
Mm.
You know, so I really try to raise people's levels of awareness of the impact seemingly inconsequential statements can have on, you know, on a adolescent or preteen daughter.
And I guess in the process, I don't know if you help people to learn some supportive ways of talking about their body to themselves as well as to their children.
Definitely, definitely. That's a lot of the work I do. Marshall Rosenberg, actually, I don't know if you're familiar with nonviolent communication.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and great work. And so I use some principles from that in helping people change the way they talk to themselves and the way they talk to the people around them. You know, and I think it really does all originate with, you know, with ourselves and with that internal dialogue. And so I help people, like I said, identify the dialogues they're having and learn how to change those dialogues.
Mm. Ooh, now that's so important, and especially to use communication patterns where there's a lot of compassion, and I think one of the things that people could turn to you for, because of your work with the nonviolent communication, is the idea that of letting go of criticism, that there's no blame and there's no guilt and there's no shame. Are those features of what you teach?
Completely. I think, you know, eating disorders, there tends to be, I mean, eating in general, there tends to be so much shame associated with it, particularly in this culture, which, you know, a lot of people have an idea of, okay, this is what's healthy. So if I eat too much, or if I don't eat the right foods, or if I don't exercise enough, then I'm not, you know, I'm not a good person, that I should be ashamed of myself. And there's a lot of, you know, shame associated with being overweight in this culture in particular. And so I help people learn how to, really learn to love themselves so that they don't have that sense of shame and that suffering that, is so common around this issue.
Yeah. Huh. Wow. Now, for parents, if they were kind of wondering about their kids, if they weren't sure that things were doing okay with their body image and stuff, what are some of the signs that a child might be in danger of dealing with some of these issues?
Yeah, a very, probably the strongest indicator is dieting. In fact, almost all cases of eating disorders in young women in particular start with dieting. So, and the numbers are, you know, 80% of high school students have been on a diet or think they should be on a diet. And it often starts, they'll begin dieting and then start eating less and less and less, and that will go the direction of anorexia. Or they start dieting and then, you know, act out against that, and it turns into compulsive eating, and then it can turn into bulimia. So if you notice that your child is dieting or talking about dieting, that is a very good indicator that something's not right, you know. And often it can be a time to talk to your child about, you know, what is beautiful, what, you know, what really is valuable, what, you know, what makes the child beautiful. It can also be a good time to check in emotionally and find out, is your child suffering, you know, from a lot of stress? Are they, you know, how are their friendships? Are they struggling with their peers in high school or in junior high? You know, how are their relationships doing? Because often eating disorders, body image, you know, trying to control one's body are a way to manage and to feel in control when things feel very out of control. And especially, you know, at the preteen all the way through adolescence, things can feel very out of control. And so a lot of women compensate by, and a growing number of men compensate by turning to food and their bodies.
Oh, okay. So something that you can count on generally. Friends may not be a stable subject in the person's life, but they can pick food whenever they want. Something's there for them.
That's exactly right. And they can control how much they can control when they eat. And so it's a way to make themselves feel safe, you know.
Okay. That just has some ramifications that end up sabotaging their effort.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. Because in what you know often happens is they start to control how much they eat and how much they exercise, and really become very inwardly focused, which then separates them from their friendships. It separates them from having to learn how to interact in, you know, in real life situations that can often be messy.
Now, yeah, are there any, you brought up a topic that I think can be very important. We're coming into an age, this information revolution and virtual reality and people having long-term relationships on a computer. They've never seen the other person, but they've been chatting in a chat room for whatever, 2 years.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some real challenges in our culture now to having quality interactions face to face with individuals. And I'm wondering if you can give us a little bit of some tips or hints there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think there is a growing sense of isolation in the clients I talk to and a lot of friends that I've talked to and peers, that there is this sense of isolation. Even though we can communicate with more people faster, we don't feel the same connection. And
so sending an email to 1,000 people is not the same as holding someone tenderly in your arms?
Well, exactly. Exactly.
No, I've been so confused. No wonder.
That's not the most extreme case, I'm sure, but you know, a lot of when I talk to a group of high school students, they'll walk outside of the auditorium and, you know, they'll be standing right next to each other, but they'll be on the cell phone with someone else, you know. And, you know, so a lot of, you know, I try to get families involved in creating time together, creating time with, you know, other people so that you really can have that connection. You know, it's interesting, Daniel Goleman, who is the kind of founder of the concept of emotional intelligence, also wrote a book called Social Intelligence, and he talks about the latest research on how our physiology responds to interactions with other people, and that a digital interaction, if you will, is really different on a physiological level than a physical interaction, you know, being in visual proximity to someone.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a really interesting situation I think we find ourselves in as a society that has ramifications for everyone. You know, how do you build relationships and build connection when so many things are done in the virtual domain?
Yeah, yeah. And, you got a hint or two to share from your experience?
Well, what I do, one, in my own life and what I work with clients on is trying to create a balance between your digital interactions and your physical interactions. So you might have your chat group friends, but then you also want to make sure, you know, that you have your friends that you can see on a regular basis. And working to cultivate those friendships as well. And it depends, you know, in some senses it's easier with the adolescents and college-age students that I work with because they have, you know, they're around people going to school. They have a lot of peers in a fairly accessible environment. With adults, it can be a little bit more challenging depending on the nature of their work. But I'll come up with, you know, we'll brainstorm ideas for, okay, what's a group that you might, maybe it would be a book club or, you know, some way to meet people that isn't just over email or over the phone.
Okay. So to get out there in the world and find something that you enjoy and then connect with others who also enjoy that.
That's exactly right. You know, and it could, I mean, for some people, the gym is a great venue or a yoga class. For other people, you know, I know a lot of people that do continuing education, so they'll go and take a language class or, you know, kind of enrich themselves and get to meet interesting people in the process.
Sure.
Yeah.
And then I guess in the sequence, when you're working with someone and they're having some of these issues with themselves, and then I guess, I don't know if it follows, if a person's having some issues with themselves, they would likely be having issues in their external relationships with others.
Yes.
I find that to definitely
be the case. And when I work, I do a lot of work with couples, because so often, especially if one person in the partnership, and definitely if both are struggling, you know, excessively with their body image, with their eating behaviors, it can really feel like there's three people in the relationship, you know, the body image struggle, you know, and then the couple. And it can take a tremendous toll on the relationship. So I have a number of exercises that I have couples go through to see how they can support one another while also having, you know, building a functional relationship and not letting the relationship be undermined by the struggle.
Any specifics that you can share? When you say exercises, are these like physical exercises or different things they would do? Writing or?
Yeah, exactly. So what I do, again, to build awareness, I will have them, you know, the couple sit down and really write out how it is, you know, how it's manifesting in their relationship. So in their specific situation, what is the struggle? Let's say, you know, a woman has intense body hatred and that's really impacting the relationship. I have them write out the nature of the problem and how it's manifesting specifically in their relationship. So does it mean she doesn't want to go out, you know, she doesn't want to go out to a restaurant because she's concerned about her appearance or she's concerned about what she's going to eat? All, you know, all those type of things.
Yeah.
And then once they kind of identify the nature of the problem, then I can help them with specific, kind of making specific choices. So one activity I do a lot with couples is have, you know, them sit, and again, I'm not there. They do this, you know, in the privacy of their own home.
Oh, okay.
But sit with their clothes off and really take the time to caress and love every part of each other's bodies. And, you know, a lot of women in particular that struggle with body image hatred and negative body obsession, they cut off from certain parts of their body as being not attractive, not desirable, not good enough to receive love. And so I have couples work together to love, you know, each part. So the stomach, the hips, the thighs, you know, every area, to ingrain, okay, you know what, your body is lovable. You are completely lovable as you are, however that is. And touch, what's great about working with couples is you can incorporate that element of touch. I mean, with individuals, you can do it as too, but do it as well. But having, you know, your sweetheart touch you really can generate a lot of positive feelings.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, you know, but particularly for, you know, women struggling with negative body obsession, it can be very helpful.
Huh. Yeah, that's a key area that you're bringing up. This talking about a touchy subject, no pun intended there, that when women, seems like maybe having issues, and you've probably heard this, where they might approach their partner wearing some different outfit or something and say, does this dress or do these pants make me look fat?
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, how do you answer that?
Yeah, that's a very difficult question. What I tell people is, instead of saying, you know, yes, that makes you look fat, or no, that doesn't make you look fat, is really spend time focusing on what you think is sexy, you know, on her. Let's say it's a man and a woman, and she's saying, honey, does this make me look fat? You know, let's say you think it is not very attractive. So, you know what, I really love this other outfit on you. Like, I think this other outfit is really sexy and gorgeous. You can answer the question, but what I really get people to put an emphasis on is, what's the positive? What do you love instead of, oh, I don't like that so much? Mm. You know, so how do you, you know, point out this, you know, this dress is gorgeous on you. I would love to see you wear it. Or, you know, I just get so turned on when you wear this pants and this sweater or whatever it is. You know, so that they start building excitement and building, you know, a positive outcome.
Oh, okay. So that way you're not necessarily having to directly address the issue of, does that make me look fat or not?
Yeah, because when someone says, you know, honey, does this make me look fat, there's usually, what they want to know is, do you think I'm beautiful? Do you love me? Am I attractive enough? All these kind of things. So I try to get it, okay, let's get to the root of what they're really asking. And if they want to feel, if they want to know, okay, you think I'm beautiful, then let's address that.
Ah, okay. So I'm just kind of wondering if that ties back into some of the spiritual aspects that no matter what we're wearing, in God's eyes or in our Creator's eyes, we're always beautiful.
That's exactly right. And what I truly believe, and what I talk a lot about, is that we are all different, you know, we are all different manifestations of the divine. And in that sense, we are all beautiful. And the more people can learn to connect with their spiritual essence and with that you know, essential creativity from which all beauty and all wisdom and success and everything great flows, you know, that when they begin to connect with that energy, that is what the, you know, is going to give them a sense of being beautiful, you know, both to themselves and to the world around them.
Huh. Wow. Oh, Sarah Maria, that's wonderful. Then, so, I mean, a person may have one outfit on, one dress on or something, and if I'm hearing you correctly, it's sort of like to adopt a position that here we are, like Shakespeare talked about, actors on the stage of life, and we can be putting on all kinds of different costumes. And no matter what costume we're wearing, whether it's the costume of a fool, or we could put on an animal costume, we could look so many different ways in our costumes. And yet, regardless of the costume that we're wearing, that innate divine beauty is always there.
That's a beautiful way to put it. It's exactly right. And throughout our lives, we're going to have different costumes.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to be playing different roles. And, you know, again, when our culture has defined beauty as young, thin, you know, and without perceived blemish, but really, you know, there's beauty in a baby, you know, there's beauty in a 90-year-old. It all comes down to how at peace are we with ourselves and how much can we allow our natural beauty to shine.
And that, so by connecting with you through this breakfreebeauty.com and some of your different programs, a person, initially gets to build that relationship of self-love, instead of this, and end this, like you talk about, this war against our bodies or against ourselves.
That's exactly right. And on, along that same theme, I do, to the first 10 people that sign up, I do a free 30-minute consultation.
Oh.
So they can go to my website, again, breakfreebeauty.com, and there's a contact us page. Fill out the contact information and let me know where you heard about me, and I will do a free 30-minute consultation to see how I might be able to help you and answer any questions that people might have about my work and my process and everything like that.
Ah, well, that's wonderful. That's nice. A free 30-minute consultation. Hooray! Hey, I want one of those.
Excellent. Well, I would be honored.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So, what are some of the other aspects of your work that you'd want to be sharing with us that kind of excite you?
Yeah. Well, fortunately, it is all very exciting for me. I love the work I do, and it's a pleasure and an honor to work with people in this area. A very big part of what I teach is focuses on the importance of meditation and learning a meditation, you know, a meditative technique to begin to increase our awareness of our spiritual nature, and also begin to see more and more clearly that we are not our thoughts and that we can make choices about our thoughts. So that's a big component of my work. What I really enjoy as well with Ayurveda and my training in Ayurveda, for anyone who doesn't know, Ayurveda is the medical science system, comes from India. It's, you know, thousands and thousands of years old, comes out of a similar tradition as yoga. And in Ayurveda, it focuses a lot on different body types and, you know, that we are all individuals and we all have our unique psychophysiology. And so I can help people begin to identify what their natural body weight is or body type is. And then they can begin to make healthy choices in diet and lifestyle for their particular constitution. you know, the fact is, you know, we all have very different body types. I mean, you know, some people are tall and lanky, other people are, you know, medium build, other people, you know, tend to be larger boned and huskier. And we can really, when we begin to view our bodies from this perspective of, oh, wait, not everyone looks like the images we're seeing on TV and magazines. Here's what my body, you know, is kind of designed to look like. Here's the way I can take the best care of it. So that's another interesting part of my work. And then finally, I think possibly what I'm most excited about is beginning to build community. You know, and this gets back to what we were talking about as, you know, building relationships and how isolating kind of modern day life can be. And what I'm hoping to do is as I continue to build a critical mass of, you know, people interested in my work and, you know, that want to begin to relate to their bodies and themselves in a different way, that we can begin to, you know, create a healthier community and really become a force in the world to honor our true beauty and honor, you know, the peaceful relationship that we can have with ourselves and with one another.
Ooh. Well, that's a worthy aspiration. And to people that are interested, like they go to your website, breaktreebeauty.com, what kind of things could they avail themselves to where they can begin to not only do some of this work, but connect to you and others?
The best way is to log on to the contact page and send me an email. My email is Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, at breakfreebeauty.com. Again, that's Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, at breakfreebeauty.com. And my website will give more information about me and my programs. I'm currently getting another site designed that is going to have a community feature and stories of, you know, other people that have, you know, struggled with this and how they've, you know, broken through and what they've done, so people can come, you know, read about other people, you know, see truly they're not alone, and then begin to connect. So at this point, the best way is to send me an email, get in touch with me, and we'll see what we can grow.
Okay. And that, I was noticing here, on this website, you have workshops, seminars, retreats, so people could get together with you for like a day or a weekend or...
Exactly. I do all different formats. So, you know, I'll go to colleges and speak for, you know, even from an hour to 2 hours. I'll do full day workshops. I'll do, you know, half day seminars. I'll do multiple day long retreats. It depends on, you know, the setting and kind of where I'm doing it, but I do a variety of different...
I was thinking of a week-long retreat perhaps near a donut factory. But that's just my thinking. I think you could probably do better than that. Do you like to get off in different, like, nice natural settings in this country, or do you go out of the country? Because, like, you're, some of your work's international, isn't it?
Yeah, I do. I do national and international work. I myself am a nature lover, and so I try to get, you know, to really beautiful, serene places, especially for retreats, you know, really peaceful, beautiful places where people can begin to, you know, really relax and detach from the world and so that they can do the inner work, you know. And that's the focus of my longer retreats is really creating a safe and peaceful cocoon, if you will, where people can really do the inner work without the distractions of the outside world.
Oh, okay. And I didn't know. Have you made up or can you for some of your meditation work? Any guided meditations that people could get, like buy a CD or something?
Yeah, I'm coming out with a CD. It's going to be ready in about a few weeks, actually. And it, again, will be available for sale on my website. And so at this point, anyone can send me an email, let me know they're interested in the CD. I'm accepting pre-orders, so as soon as it comes out, it'll be shipped directly to whoever's ordered it. And the CD that's coming out is going to be, I'm going to take people through a series of steps, some of what I've outlined with you, of how to create a positive body image and create more love for themselves. And then I'm also later going to be coming out with a guided meditation CD. So again, they can contact me and I will keep them in touch, let them know as things develop. I'm writing a book that, I'm not sure when it will be out, but that's in the works as well. So.
Oh, and, is any of that going to have things in it about, like, Ayurveda, body types, and eating disorders?
It will. The book I'm working on will have information about Ayurveda. It's also, it's going to be a, really a manual, for learning to love your body. So it's going to have, very specific exercises for, identifying voices and detaching. It's going to have specific exercises and meditations for connecting with, their spiritual essence, and it's also going to have, an extensive section on exercises for befriending our bodies, different things we can do to really cultivate that love and appreciation for our physical selves. And then it's going to also have some, a chapter on finding our purpose and connecting with, why we're here and what's the larger picture, what's the difference we're here to make in the world.
Oh, okay. Now, I'm curious, we're getting here to wrapping it up. I feel like we're just getting started. It's almost been an hour. I'm curious, if someone is under a lot of stress, they're dealing with eating disorders or just a high-pressure life, any things that you would suggest just to help them to get started, to begin to make a little bit of change in their lives in the midst of what may be a lot of chaos?
Yeah, the first thing I can say is learn to meditate. And they can contact me. The Chopra Center, has meditation teachers, around the world and in most parts of this country in particular. And it's a fairly reasonably priced, so that's a great option. I'm also familiar with quite a few other systems of meditation and retreat, locations. So if people are interested, they could contact me. Learning to meditate will provide lasting benefits. It will reduce stress. It will, help in a number of areas. That's a very, very key first thing that I have people do. And then the other important part is if someone is really struggling with an acute eating disorder, it can be worth, finding a professional, professional therapist, investigating an eating disorder clinic. Again, people can contact me, send me an email. I have a lot of information on resources that are available, but it's very important for people that are struggling to know they are not alone, and there are a lot of resources out there that can help.
Wow. Oh, you've cheered me up, I'll tell you, and I know the people that are hearing this, that they've been inspired to know that there's a path and that the techniques that you're talking about aren't just about eating disorders, meditation and loving self-talk. Oh my gosh, the list of things that could improve just by people getting in touch with you and learning of your techniques, I'm sure it would have broad spectrum benefit.
Yeah, it's really, you know, I do a lot of work with body image and eating disorders, but I also work with people in, you know, that are just stressed out with their jobs or, you know, that have
stressed
those...
out.
Who could be stressed out? What? How can we be stressed out? You know, or that, you know, they're struggling in relationships, they're struggling with their self-esteem, they just feel like they could be getting more out of life. All of those areas, you know, like you said, the techniques that I teach really can apply to so many different areas of someone's life.
Ah, so this Break Free Beauty is really a broad spectrum support for better living. Ah, well, Sarah, Maria, this is wonderful information you've shared, and I'm looking forward to learning more about that, and maybe, you know, I'd like to get a consultation with you, and my goodness, I want to encourage the listeners out there to take advantage of her wonderful offer, and we all look forward to your CDs and book coming out. I just thank you for being a guest here on Advanced Living today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I am so glad that you had me on the show and that we've been able to dialogue in this way.
Ah, yes. And knowing that this energy goes out to help the lives of many, many, many people. And thank you, Sarah Marie, and my beloved listeners. Thank you, and to all of us, calling for the blessing for a divine rest of the day and just a wonderful week until we meet again next Saturday for more Advanced Living Radio. I say thank you, God bless you, and goodbye for now. Let's go.